Mini episode 1343 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
This is a draft class where we've mentioned the top guys at this point, at quarterback and at wide receiver. There are any number of, and I'll just kind of go in a general direction next. I'll start with you, Chris. Any of the really, really, really top-level guys who are going to be going very, very, very high in this draft. You have a generational talent, Sewell, the offensive tackle from Oregon. He would be a nice fit as Joe Burrow's bodyguard, to be sure, if he drops down to Cincinnati. Linebacker Micah Parsons certainly would be a great fit for any team defensively. Kyle Pitts, I've used the word a couple times already. I don't want to wear it out, but a potential generational talent at tight end. That's really what he projects as. Couple of elite shutdown cover corners, Patrick Surtain II out of Alabama, and Cleb Farley out of Virginia Tech. And again, as you keep going here and looking at the different positions, whether it be Gregory Rousseau, the defensive end from Miami, so many different guys here who could fit in and who are pretty much locks to go pretty high in the first round. And in terms of any of the top-level talent, let's just say, like I said, outside of quarterback and wide receiver, which we've already discussed in depth, among these uber blue-chip guys, Chris, who do you really have your eyes on the most?
All right, before I answer that, I want to ask Jason a question and get his take on the great Cincinnati debate, which is Ja'Marr Chase or Sewell at the number five pick.
So the interesting thing with me and Sewell is I love a lot of it. I love his recovery. I love how he can engage quickly. I've even seen a couple plays where he engaged a defensive end, blocked him, and then turned him inside to block somebody else. So he's got a lot to be impressed with. But there is some negative tape on him. I'm on the fence between whether I like him or Rashawn Slater at Northwestern better. But very solid. For me, if we're talking Cincinnati, I like the tackle depth, especially considering I only have four of them going in the first round, and I think they can get somebody solid in the second on the turn, which means for me, giving Joe Burrow Ja'Marr Chase is almost too good to pass up. Not to mention the kid from Clemson they got last year. They could end up with a nice stable of offensive weapons for him to grow with. So for right now, unless I hear something in the wind, I'm leaning towards Ja'Marr Chase to Cincinnati.
Having said that, let me just jump in, though. Let me just say this, though. If you end up taking a wide receiver there, you're picking out of the Browns' old playbook, which is what you never want to do. The fact that the wide receiver, once formerly thought to be the future of the NFL, and then earlier on in life thought to be the future of Ewing Oil, John Ross, ultimately he's leaving. He's out of Cincinnati here. So you get to a position where you're replacing somebody who's leaving with a high pick. The Browns basically own a patent on that. Detroit, with what they did last year, drafting a cornerback to replace the guy that they let go to the Eagles, should have been paying royalties to all the old Browns GMs. So that's my only criticism about not taking. Plus, I like Sewell too much, and Joe Burrow clearly needs a bodyguard. So I come down on the side of that one. But again, take it away, Chris.
Well, let me dive in on some guys that I really like. Jason just mentioned him, Rashawn Slater. I actually like Slater more than Sewell.
Wow.
Because of the positional diversity. He can play any position on the line. And I give him a slight nod if I was drafting because of that, that, you know, injuries happen during a season and sometimes you've got to move guys around and you know, he's a guy that I think could play anywhere if you had to move him around on the line because of a worst case scenario. So he's that talented. He's that athletic. I think Slater's going to have a long, you know, Pro Bowl type career in the NFL. So I'm very high on him. You know, there's other guys that I'm very high on, but then I put question marks next to. Jalen Phillips out of Miami at defensive end, edge rusher. You know, the talent is there. If he doesn't have the injury question marks and the sort of health question marks and the, I would just say the fire in the belly question marks to want to love the game and play it. And I think those are real things, especially for someone who's had concussions, left the game once in college, came back. You cannot deny that if he doesn't have that history, I think he's edge one on everybody's boards.
Mm-hmm.
I think he falls down because you're making a massive investment. And, you know, God forbid game one, he suffers a concussion. You know, I worry about a guy like that, you know, whether or not his career is just not going to take off. And it could be, you know, short. Another Northwestern guy that I love is Greg Newsome.
Right.
The second. Love him. Absolutely love him. He is way more athletic than I think people realize.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got he's got great skill. Love his hips. I think he's going to be another guy that, you know, a lot of people are oohing and aahing over like J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain. I think he's going to be right there and be just as good, if not in some ways better.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of guys on here, too, that I, you know, I don't like that people are, you know, geeking over. Quiddy Pay out of Michigan. It just feels like something. I'm not a fan.
Okay.
I think that there's going to be. When I watch him, I don't like his size and how that's going to translate.
Mm-hmm.
At the next level. Again, this is, you know, watching, you know, assessing, and I could be just as wrong. Another guy that I'm not really a fan of is Rousseau out of Miami, another edge rusher.
Okay.
That's one I worry about a number of issues in terms of, you know, does he ever reach the ceiling that you think he should?
Sure.
As it relates to work ethic and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a lot of guys like that that you think should be better than they are, and it never happens. So there's some guys out there that I, you know, I'm not high on. I'm not as high on Tony out of Florida, the wide receiver, as Jason is.
Okay.
I think he's going to be kind of one-dimensional. And to his point, if you're going to use him on kicks and punts, you know, you might get more out of him. But so I'm not huge on him, but. You know, they're overall, the depth is here in this draft. Again, to Jason's point, if you're looking for a tackle like the Bengals, maybe you do go Jamar Chase at five, and you come back and you get a guy like Eichenberg, you know, up at the top of the second round, available, and you've accomplished the same thing in terms of providing protection and giving Burrow another weapon. So, other guys I love, Zaven Collins I love. Browns aren't going to take him, Browns fans. They're not taking a linebacker. Sorry to tell you. Every Browns fan is like, linebacker at 26.
Right.
Not going to happen. They're going to take a cornerback. I like the kid also out of Georgia.
Uh-huh.
The corner out of Georgia, what's his name? The other one, Stokes. I like Stokes. Eric Stokes. I like him. He's a guy that I think the Browns, depending on how the board falls, a team like the Browns could easily, at 26, they're going to have interesting strategy because you could see them packaging picks and moving up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 8, 9, 10 spots. You could also see them not able to make that deal because the way the board falls and there's not somebody they're looking for. And I could easily see the Browns getting out of 26 and dropping into those first couple picks in the second round. And then later on, you know, packaging more picks to move up in the third or something back into the second. I think watch for a team like the Browns to be very active. And they're not going to take nine guys. I think they're going to end up taking like five.
Agreed. So. That's what needs to happen. Is they need to do that. And ideally, if you can, move up out of the sixth and seventh rounds into at least the fifth round with some of the surplus there. But that would be maybe a dream scenario. Also, a linebacker would be a dream scenario. But I know linebacker is not prized by analytics, so won't hold my breath on that one there. Although, again, between linebacker and safety, they are in a pretty good place right now. Certainly much better than they were last year, no question about it. Jason, I'm sure yet again, a lot of the names that you were going to mention were probably just mentioned by Chris, but take it away anyways.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to go take a moment, cry in the corner on the whole linebacker thing.
I want Collins, man. I want Collins.
here's my retort to that, though. If we're talking straight up linebacker and getting into metrics and all that stuff, analytics and whatnot, I can understand the argument that they're not valued very high, except when your defensive coordinator has a very specific position in mind that both plays linebacker and safety, and the one guy in the draft just happens to fit that mold perfectly, is available.
Okay.
And I think that's the one. Now, my dream scenario is that we talk about packaging picks, and we move up from 26 into the early teens, and we go get who, for me, is the most fantastic player in the draft. And because of the way the draft falls, there's too much offense spinning too fast for him to go early. I've tested it. I've tried it. I've even forced it. I can't do it. And that is Micah Parsons from Penn State.
Woo-hoo.
I've got him going no earlier than 19th. And if he's 19, and Rick, feel free to take a journey back through your recollection. Whenever we are within 5 to 10 picks of the guy that I desperately want, I will break equipment if they don't trade up to get him.
Yeah.
So, Micah Parsons is my dream scenario because he fits whatever Joe Woods wants to do linebacker-wise. That being said,
he would be amazing. You're right.
I do have Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah just accidentally being there at 26, and that's where I have a hard time saying no. Now, getting away from the Browns for a second, clearly I'm not high on Mac Jones. I'm actually super leery of both Miami Hurricane linebacker defensive ends, Rousseau and Jalen Phillips.
Okay.
Both of those guys I'm a little nervous about. But when we kind of look through this landscape, I think the top tackle is dealer's choice, right? I think the top wide receiver is dealer's choice. And I think you see that a lot of the way through with them. I think some of the can't-miss guys, Patrick Surtain, I really like J.C. Horn, but I think he's a risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be more interested in something than covering, and that worries me a little bit. Elijah Vera Tucker, tackle/guard out of USC. I feel like you can put him in and you're just good. Whether he's an all-pro, I don't know about that, but I think he's safe. And since Chris brought him up, I was just trolling through the national landscape and ironically came across a mock draft with Tony Grossi. And no, I did not seek that out on purpose.
Hopefully not.
And he was just raving about Greg Newman. And I thought, here we go. He's not the guy everyone's talking about. And here's another Cleveland media person who's just going to do the unconventional thing. Pick the guy you're not thinking of. Like, here's a can't miss. Then I went back and rewatched him. And Chris is absolutely dead on. For his size and his measurables, he is way more limber, has more body control, and he's deceptively quick. He's one of those guys that no matter who he's covering, I think you feel like he'll do a decent job. Where he fits on the hierarchy of his upside, I don't know about that. But when you just look at him on tape, you go, yes, that guy jumps off the screen. So if we were talking Cleveland and going corner, I think that's the area you're talking about. You're not getting J.C. Horn. You're not getting Patrick Surtain. But Greg Newman, Aaron Robinson, Asante Samuel in the second, maybe. But there's a lot to like here, and like a lot of times, you're going to have a few guys that just make you nervous. And the thing I want to, I just want to circle back to Kwity-Paye. And let's be honest, at my heart, I'm still an Ohio guy, which means I'm not going out of my way to watch a ton of Michigan.
Right.
So maybe you guys just see more Michigan than I have. But the thing I look at with him is if you're drafting him to play tackle, I totally agree. I'm a little scared about that because he's only 277 pounds. But if you put him kind of in that, and I hate to keep going back to Cleveland, but if you put him in the sort of defensive end dynamic that Cleveland is running with now, where you have your alpha defensive end on one side, and you've got this other guy who's going to be decent against the run, if not very good against the run, and will get in there from time to time. Now, am I expecting 15 sacks a season? No, but I do like what he does, and I feel like he's kind of a smaller, slimmer Jadeveon Clowney as we look at him now in his career. He's not going to be the sack leader that we thought he was, but he's intimidating against the run. And with Kwity-Paye, maybe it's just the highlights are just jumping out of my mind, but he looks really interesting, but he's clearly got to play defensive end because I don't think he can handle the interior line the interior offensive line that you go up against. But I can see that if we're talking him as a defensive tackle. But aside from that, I think after you get out of the top 50, you're still going to see lots of guys that, A, you didn't think were going to be there, and, B, serve a role that totally fit within their wheelhouse.
Well, and I'll tell you what, Kwity-Paye, he has to send a royalty check. If you're talking about enigmatic Michigan draft prospect, he's got to send a royalty check to Peppers, because not since a couple of years ago when he came out at safety has there been this kind of arguing about where this guy might fit in the pros. So it's not even original for this guy to be a question for different teams here, because it's sort of an echo of days gone by, albeit from a different position. Starting with you, Chris, any other guys that we haven't talked about here yet or any other angles for some of these teams to be pursuing in the draft here, something we haven't covered yet?
Are you referring more just to like a team by team, like what some of these team strategies should be? Or
this is the wonderful kind of thing of wherever you want to take it. I mean, as far as if you're looking at team scenarios on things that we haven't really talked about yet, any kind of players, we've talked about a lot of players, but in case there's any players you're thinking of, basically kind of take it where you want to take it as we go full circle here.
Well, I like, let me just mention a couple other players I like that I did mention that are sort of second or third round guys to keep an eye on. The corner out of Syracuse, Melifonwu, I like him. He's a guy, I think he's a guy that, you know, is could be late second sneak in, but probably third round. I do like, yeah, if you're talking about a later edge guy that you want to look at, two guys that I do like. One is the kid out of Wake Forest, Basham. I like him. A little not sure about edge setting, run, athletic enough on the run, but I do like him in the right system. And then I also like the kid out of Houston, Peyton Turner, as an edge. And I would remind, and I know I think I remind Rick of this almost weekly for Browns fans, that when we talk about Cleveland and the edge situation, they grabbed Curtis Weaver off the waivers last year after he injured his foot after his fifth practice with the Dolphins.
Right.
And the Browns had a third round grade on him.
Yeah. Kind of
the all-time Mountain West sack leader. I love that kid coming out of Boise State. And fans kind of forget that he's like a freebie pick this year.
Right.
You know, we stashed him on IR.
Right.
And forgot about it. I think he's the kind of guy that developed. He could be that opposite Myles Garrett, you know, next year when a guy like Clowney moves on to his, you know, eighth team in 12 seasons or whatever. You know, for Browns fans, you know, don't forget, you've got Curtis Weaver sitting out there quietly, you know, working out. He's been working out with Delpit, you know, every day since they were both away from the team in the last year.
Right.
Another guy I like, and you know, Rick will scream, North Carolina Homer. I really like sort of like third round late third round, could be there for the Browns. Chaz Surratt out of North Carolina, the linebacker. I like him a lot. I know I'm a homer, I'll admit. But I watched him play, and I like him.
Well,
and I think he's the kind of guy that the Browns will focus on in, like, the third round on that linebacker position, because I really do think they are going to go corner in the first round.
Well, if by the Browns will focus on, you mean you've been emailing the front office and customer relations and anything else, then, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. Well, listen, two can play that game if we're going to do this. And I have to say, in terms of my father's alma mater, somebody that I think is a very, very, very highly underrated prospect here. Anybody who saw late in the season, Trey Sermon is never going to be a number one running back on a team, but as part of a rotation, as somebody that can be a significant part of a rotation, that guy is going to be way underdrafted for what his ability is. If you saw what he did late in the year and what a difference maker he can be. So I will chime in with something that I saw up close and personal from Daddy's alma mater in my case. So Jason, over to you for any other guys that we haven't talked about yet from your perspective.
Yeah, a few of them were kind of mentioned, so I'll circle back around, but in case anyone's just jumping into the middle of the recording. Micah Parsons.
Yes.
Just throw it out there again. I would go so far as to say that I would almost get to the draft for that guy. Now, obviously, we still need to get some corner depth or a starter, depending on your perception of Greedy. But just throwing some names out. I love Zaven Collins. I love what he
did.
Even if I do wish he had a little bit more, let's say, initial quickness. But for someone you're going to get in the 20s and beyond, I think he's fantastic. And I think he fits one of those types of teams where you don't necessarily have to have a Mike, Will, and Sam linebacker. You just need linebackers.
Right.
And I think he's fantastic. I think he fits a number of different things. I'm sure you can hear me in the background, but the second Chris said North Carolina, I'm on pins and needles. Say Chad, because this dude, I agree, he's probably late second to late third range, but I really love that he's a former quarterback that brings certain instincts, and he doesn't ever seem to get truly blown up. So I love that pick, especially if you don't have to get him in the first two rounds. I'm secretly intrigued by Kyle Trask as a developmental prospect, so I don't know what that means yet, but I think he's a nice thing that you can groom to fit certain parts of your offense, and I'm building this up here. Trey Sermon, that was another name I wrote down.
Yep.
I agree with you. I don't know that you're ever going to just give that guy the rock 25 times a game.
Right.
But in this league that we're living in, where you either have a Derrick Henry type, or you have, you know, sort of, and we have the best version of this, but you look at the Chubb and Hunt model, and no one's suggesting that Trey Sermon's either going to be one of those two. But just the notion that you could have him as the 1B to somebody else,
right,
I think is really intriguing. And then for the last two I've got, well, three really, but the last two ones I like, and you guys are going to have to help me out on this because I struggle. You guys don't have this problem, obviously. But I struggle with my objectivity and my allegiance to who I like in college. So there's a part of me that just wants to believe with every fiber of their being that Baron Browning is a top 75 pick. Now, I don't know. It could be that he just flashes and there's some negativity I'm not seeing there. But he's not being talked about, and whenever I watch him, I'm like, he looks like he should be talked about.
Sure.
And then the last guy I really love, and to an irrational level, and I think it's because I see him as a Devin Bush type, and that is Nick Bolton out of Mizzou. He's 6 foot, 240-ish. He's a thumper. He just runs through lanes. Is he that good? I don't know. But right now, if let's say a team like Cleveland who needs a linebacker but just doesn't want to go linebacker early, and then let's say they go corner or something like that, and then you're coming back around the second round and he's there, I need to trade up for him. I think he could be that important, and he's not necessarily specifically middle or outside. I mean, he's sort of a jack of all trades, but he does so with fury and anger, and I love that.
Right.
And the last thing I want to mention, and then we get one of these every year. Every year we get one of these, and I remember a couple of years ago, we were watching the Combine, and they had Deion Sanders on, and ironically, it was another Penn State player. And he was a white guy who ran a 4.340, and Deion was beside himself laughing because he thought that was funny. And every year, one of these guys puts up crazy reps at 225, crazy 40 time or something, and we all get enamored with that. And we all rise this guy up the board, and we say, oh, he's going to go in the first 20 picks or something. And then it isn't until later that we go back and go, yeah, but can he play football? And my thing is, I just don't understand how anyone can have Jason Owa from Penn State penciled in as a top 20 pick just because he ran a fast 40. The guy didn't have a single sack last year, and I'm sorry, but you have to have at least a sack to even register on my radar as you are a threat as a pass rusher.
Right.
Now, he may be a very productive football player, but he darn sure doesn't belong in the top 20.
Totally agree. Totally agree with that.
He is one of those, it's just pure speculation. They're just enamored with the athleticism. It's the same sort of thing about Barkevious Mingo.
Right.
And why I hated that pick.
Yep.
Because it was just projection.
Yep.
The guy had never shown an ability to be that great, and they just fell in love with the athleticism.
Right. That was awful.
I look at Owa just exactly the same way. Thank you, Jason, for saying it. And I would tell you on your Baron Browning, I don't think he's top 75, but I think he's top 100. I think he's in that 90s, 90 something range, maybe, just making it inside the top 100. I think he's a guy that's going to go probably in the fourth round, fifth round, maybe if things don't go his way. But to your point, he should be talked about.
By the way, I have to say this, and I'm going to contradict myself a little bit because I spent a little bit of time putting over Trey Sermon. I think you guys would agree with me, and I don't like to put anybody else in sports media on blast unless there's a good reason, but Lindy's Pro Football Draft Guide for this year, their comp on Trey Sermon is Kareem Hunt. I mean, even I'm not saying that. I'm saying Trey Sermon is undervalued. Their player comp is Kareem Hunt. Come on, guys. Get serious.
No.
Yeah, not in any universe. And I love Trey Sermon, but he's not Kareem Hunt. He's not a guy who's ever going to lead the league in rushing, for God's sake. So I what they were smoking when they came out with that one, I have no idea. And I knew you guys would agree with me on that. We might like Trey Sermon to a certain level, but geez, let's not get carried away. Chris, I'm going to go back to you here as we're sort of bringing it full circle here at the end. Any additional points or thoughts that you have about this draft that we didn't hit yet?
Yeah, I know you talked a lot on position groups. I actually think, the running backs are actually pretty sound, pretty deep. We didn't even talk about Hubbard out of Oklahoma State, the two kids out of North Carolina. You're going to get your next version of Gio Bernard and Michael Carter. Travis Etienne out of Clemson is a guy that will probably get scooped up by the Buccaneers at the end of the first round if the Steelers don't take him.
Oh, God.
And then when you talk about – and then, if you're talking depth, I mean, you're going to get a guy in like the fourth or fifth round, probably fifth round just because he's out of Buffalo, but Jared Patterson, who's, 5'9", 190. But that guy just runs the football. He is a talented runner even though he's small. And that's another guy I think, someone's going to scoop him up in the fifth round and going to be absolutely, thrilled with what he's going to be able to add to their running back stable. So I think there's actually, for a league that, to Jason's point, that's really moving to the two running back, focus, there's going to be a lot to choose from this year. There's some talent.
There is. There definitely is. And I'll tell you what, You will be able to hear my screams all the way across Lake Erie to Canada if the freaking Steelers get lucky enough to have either Harris or Etienne drop to them at running back. And I'm bracing myself for it. I'm just bracing myself.
One of them will be there.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
I'm just telling you, one of them's going to be there.
It just...
Now, the question is, do they spend a first-round pick on Etienne? Because I think Etienne is the one that will be there.
Yeah.
Or do they look to come back in the second round with a guy like Hubbard? I don't know, but you know, we don't know what their board looks like. But I think that's the Steelers are definitely going to be looking at a guy like Etienne.
Oh, they're both
sucks for us.
I'll be physically ill if that happens, and that's the thing. And I'll tell you what, too. I know I'm going to sound bitter saying this, but the Steelers, in so many cases, oh, they're so brilliant at drafting. All they're doing is benefiting from guys dropping that idiot teams in front of them let drop. And this is just classic Steelers. They're going to luck into getting one of those two guys, and Kevin Colbert and everybody's going to run around like they're so smart when it shouldn't have happened in the first place. And it just makes me ill. You can tell how sick I am at the thought of that. So, Jason, pick me up here. I know you got some good thoughts here as we bring this full circle on the draft.
Well, yeah. As I'm working through mocks today, I don't actually have a running back going in the first round.
Okay.
Now, the thing with Pittsburgh, and I'm going to piggyback on that, and we'll bring it around to something a little nicer. If the question comes, is it more important for them to reach and take Etienne at, what was it, 24?
And I don't consider that a reach, somewhat.
The fifth best offensive tackle.
Sure.
Now, I think taking the running back feels a little... early Browns comeback, 99 through, you know, 02, fixing the wrong thing first. But if the best they've got is Darisaw out of Virginia Tech for offensive tackle, that might be something that actually happens. But yes, yeah, just overall, I feel like this is one of those drafts where you don't feel like you absolutely have to get blank at this point in time, right? If you need a quarterback and one of the top four or five is gone, you can wait. You know, if you need a corner, there's some depth there. So in general, I feel like this is one of those good, solid drafts where pretty much every team is going to be made better. The question is, who's going to be the crazy one that reaches on the guys that are workout warriors or one-dimensional, or, you know, who's going to be too high on somebody and reach? Because that's going to jack everything up.
Yeah,
I think the whole first round, you could probably go to 12 before anyone really has any issues. But, you know, we start looking at those middle rounds, talking about someone like a Trey Sermon or Chaz Surratt, Nick Bolton, some of those guys. There's talent. There's guys out there that are going to go rounds 2 through 4 who are going to be 15-year starters.
Yep.
Now, whether they're all pro starters is, you know, we won't know that yet. That's probably going to take some time to figure out. But of all of the sexy positions, quarterback, wide receiver, pass rusher, corner, all these go really deep. So even if the plan is for, say, a team out there, let's say, desperately needs a corner, if you don't like the value, pick something else and something good will still be there in the second round. And as it pertains to bringing it back around to my selfish nature of wanting everything good to go for the Browns, I feel like this, and I feel like I say this every year. This is a great opportunity for any team like in a position like the Browns have, where you look at the roster and go, there isn't but maybe one real, actual hole to fill. Then everything becomes about depth and balance and all these other things. You can look at it and say, if I've got 9 picks, 9 rookies ain't making this roster.
Right.
So for the first time in maybe my adult life, can we please, for the love of all you hold dear, shed some of these picks, move around, and get the most punch you can get. And for me, if I'm a fan of, say, Cleveland or Tampa or Kansas City or someone, one of these teams that you absolutely expect to be back in the playoffs because of how their roster looks, don't sit there and be the front office that's worried that what if we miss an opportunity. No, more is not better. Take the group of picks you have, package them up, and come out of this thing with somewhere between 3 and 6 draft picks, but really good 3 to 6 draft picks. And I think there's a handful of teams that are in a good position that could dramatically make themselves better if they just decided, I'm going to come out of this draft with four or five picks, but they're all going to be, you know, in the top 200. And I think this is one of those drafts where it's just tailor-made for that, even if I say that every year.
It is, yeah. And that's where, and again, in looking at this now, again, for the Browns, probably the most pressing thing won't be filled in the first round because there isn't the talent there in the first round, but second or third, or really third or fourth round, probably. Shelly Richardson getting released at defensive tackle sort of unexpectedly. You're going to need a D tackle, but Richardson won't be replaced in the first round. They'll get a guy in the high to mid rounds probably to replace him and get in the mix there. So, as we look at this, a really, really, really intriguing draft class. I mean, guys like us, draft Knicks, I mean, every year we're always psyched for it, but this year there just seems to be even a little bit something extra added to it. I know part of it is, Chris, with us being two-thirds of this panel here, we're based on the North Coast. We get to see it here while it's here, whatever version of it the league is deigning to give us this year anyways. But, Chris, a great show as always here, breaking it down. Thank you so much, buddy.
Thank you.
And Jason Jones, the heart and soul of our draft coverage in Pro Football Draftology 2021, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com and the fdhlounge.com April 26th and thereafter. Jason, thank you so much for the great conversation and breakdown also, my friend.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the our draft coverage is probably top five of my annual calendar. Look forward to this like Christmas and 4th of July.
I do. I mean, and that, and I'm not shy about putting this show over, but go find me anything better than what we just did here, and I'm going to tell you that you're not going to find it. So I'm just proud as hell of this and of you guys for being a part of it. Can't thank you enough. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this mini episode of the FDH Lounge.